on this grind. Gotta get mine, see I'm on this grind. Yeah, I'm on this grind. Working overtime, man, I'm on this grind. Come on, yeah, I stay on this grind. On this grind. On this grind. On this grind. Come on.
Oh yeah, I'd like to welcome you to the On This Grind podcast, where we talk about life lessons that can be learned from the music business. And I'm really excited to kick things off with the first episode today, which we're going to talk about the three qualities that I think are essential for success. Now, like I said in that description, this is life lessons that can be learned from the music business. So these are lessons I've learned from the from just being in the music business for 15 years, but I think it can be applicable for any business you're in, especially for entrepreneurs starting their own business, but also for students, for university students, high school students that are looking to take over the world as well. So hopefully you could get some value out of it. And before we kick things off with this first episode, I want to tell you guys a couple of reasons why I'm doing the podcast. The first is because this is what I listen to. I used to listen to the hottest new hip hop all the time. That's the only thing I'd have in my car. But lately, over the last year or two, I listened to a lot of podcasts more and more often. So that's what's bumping in my ride. Now, it doesn't really bump as much as the new Jay-Z or the new Snoop Dogg. But still, that's what I've been listening to a lot. The second reason is because I get asked a lot of questions about the music business, whether it's about grants or developing your career or taking it global. So I wanted to create a forum where I could kind of talk about those and expand on those. And like I said, it doesn't matter if you're in the music business, I think you can get a little bit of value from it. So the first episode, the three qualities that I think are essential to success. Now, originally I was going to call this podcast Triple H because they all start with an H. But I didn't want you to get the wrong idea, especially on the first one, and think this is a wrestling podcast. So they all start with H, and I'm going to talk about them in a certain order because I think they really kind of fall into place in this order. So the first H to get things started is hunger. You got to want it. Now, this is something that might sound basic, but I think it's really true. It's the foundation of everything you do. And especially in the digital age, I find that hunger is lacking in the young generation. I mean, in the older generation who's hustling too. But I really find that the hunger can be lacking because technology is great. It's made a lot of things easier, but it's also made people lazier. So an example of this is that back in the day, when I was sending out music when I got started, if I wanted to send music to a radio station or a media outlet, I would have to press a CD. And if I wasn't pressing like 500 or 1,000, I'd have to burn a CD, which means I'd also have to print a label. Now, that was the tricky part for me because I wasn't so good about putting this label onto the CD. And anybody who went through that knows what I mean. It's not the easiest thing. After you get it down, you could do it. But there's definitely a lot of frisbees in the process. So you had to press the CD. You had to put the label, make a press kit, and then you had to go to the post office. You had to mail it. So each of these steps cost money for the CD, for the labels, for those discarded ones, and for the postage. And after you sent it, then you could follow up with an email to that contact. But now you skip all those steps and you just go straight to that email. You can just send a link to your SoundCloud, to your YouTube, and that's all that person needs. So it's easier nowadays. But that doesn't always mean that you can just go about it just in that kind of basic way, because nowadays when I get a message from somebody sending me their song, they might just say, "Hey, Dio," and they go on to the message and I realize this is the same message they sent everybody. So you get a lot of spam nowadays. And because of that, there's a lot of noise out there. It's hard to find out that quality music because nowadays everybody can do it, right? So like I said, I see a lot of that hunger lacking. And another example to bring it to now is promotions, especially if you're promoting a show or a concert. Facebook has kind of been the default. Facebook, maybe it's Twitter, maybe it's Instagram, whatever your social media style is. But nowadays, it's about creating a digital flyer, posting that, and then hoping people will come to your show. And that's fine because, you know, I do the same thing. I used to print flyers and go to the show and hand those out, but don't do that so much anymore. But what I like are the ones who go a step further. And maybe they'll post that flyer, but they'll also post a picture of, hey, I'm in this town right now. I got a show coming up in 2 weeks, just out on the streets, putting up some posters. Check it out right now. And so when I see a picture of that, I'm like, oh, that person's hungry. They really want it, and they're doing something about it. The music business, the hip-hop game, is very competitive. So you have to have that hunger because it comes down to sometimes, how much do you really want it? Now, some people say they want it, but I don't know how much they really want it. Now, for music and for hip-hop, this is something where there's no like schedule. There's no blueprint of being an artist. I live in Canada. You know, some kids, I have kids of my own, so now I see it, but some kids from age 3, they're on skates, their parents are grooming them to be hockey superstars. They're putting them in all these courses, classes to try to skate better and move their way up. So they're kind of forced into it. When I was coming up as a rapper, nobody had to tell me. Nobody was telling me to go practice my rhymes. It's just something I wanted to do. I came home after school, wrote my rhymes, freestyling in the room. And it wasn't work. It was fun. Now, some people will say that if you find something you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life. Sounds real good. Sounds like something a motivational speaker would say, right? And you know, I guess that's kind of true, but I don't really believe that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to rain on the parade. Because when you really want to pursue something and turn that hobby into your profession, you have to have discipline. And this is where a lot of artists that are like, oh man, I just want to quit my job. This is where they mess up because they think it's just going to be fun. Like, I want to be an artist. I could just be in the studio all day. But then it becomes work. And there's some days where you don't want to go to the studio, but you have to go to the studio. There's some days where I wake up and I have a show, sometimes doing shows in schools. I got to do a show at 8:30 in front of 500 students. And so I have to bring my A game, and I might be tired, but I can't come in there tired. I can't come in there on a 5 out of 10. I have to come in on a 9 or a 10 level to get everybody fired up. That's why I'm always hitting some Tim Hortons or some Starbucks in the morning, get a little fired up. Because if I don't come with that energy, they're not going to get the same type of performance. And anybody who's gone to see a concert and seen a performer who's a little bit off their game knows what I'm talking about. It doesn't have to be an emerging artist. It could be like that legendary artist. They've done 1,000 shows, but you still feel like, I paid this money, you better bring it. Now, I say that, but really, that's the easy part. Like, for me to go from that 5 to 10, I mean, it's not that hard. I'm rapping in front of a crowd. I've always wanted to do this, so I can psych myself up. You know, going to the studio, I'm working with a talented producer or engineer. Like, it's not really that hard to get fired up. But I think that hunger is about not only when you don't want to do it, but doing the things that you don't want to do. And sometimes that can mean working on your weaknesses. A lot of people don't focus on their weakness. They just practice what they're good at it, and they let that weakness go. But hunger is saying, I'm going to get better at that. Hunger means, like I said, doing the things you don't want to do. So if you're a chef and you say, man, I love cooking so much, I just want to open a restaurant. And some days you're not going to want to cook. You know, maybe you're tired of making that same dish. But that's not your problem with running your business. You realize that you have to run your business. There's other things that go into it. There's the accounting. There's just the taxes, that hiring people, all these other things. And so for an artist, sometimes we say to ourselves, well, that's what I'm going to get somebody else to do. And for an artist, that means getting a manager. And I was the same way. I was like, you know, for me to take the next step in my career, that's what I need. I just need to get a manager. I thought that would solve all my problems because I didn't want to do those boring, repetitive tasks. I felt that's what was holding me back. I did a little research, though. And when I looked at the good managers, I saw They had their hands full because they were working with artists that were bringing in money and the manager was working off a percentage. So that's why a lot of managers don't pick up new talent. They want to see you develop. They're looking for new talent, but they want to see you develop a little bit more because for them to invest their time, they want to see a little bit of return. But what hunger taught me is when you don't have an opportunity, you have to create that opportunity. And that's something that's hip hop. I mean, you can apply it to other cultures, but in hip hop, it came from guys who wanted to play a musical instrument. Maybe they didn't have one, but they did have a record player. So let's turn that into a musical instrument. So for me, it meant I don't have a manager. I'm going to be a manager. I can't get a show. Well, I know about this open mic. I'm going to go play the open mic because that's going to give me an opportunity to perform. Now, fast forward, and I booked over 1,000 shows for myself. But it's not because I wanted to. It's because I had to. It became a necessity. So some people look and say, hey, Dio, man, like, I see you're doing good at grants. Like, you know, you must, like, want to do the grants. And I'm like, no, man, I got into grants because I wanted to fund my project and I saw it was the best way. It became a necessity. I just wanted to rap. But when I recognized that a record deal wasn't coming around and these record labels weren't knocking on my door, I said to myself, I got to do things myself. I got to take the reins of my career. And my next step for myself was making my own CD. The cool thing about when you take the reins and you seize your destiny yourself is that you get an education from it. So when I was just a fan of hip hop, I just thought, you know, you just go to the studio, make a CD, done deal. Cool. But now that I made my first CD, I realized what went into it. I didn't know about mixing, but I didn't know what mastering was. And now I found out because now I had to pay a little bit more. And then I wanted to design the cover. So I did a professional photo shoot. I got a graphic designer. And I had to kind of be the quarterback and look at all those things and realize how I want to present myself and how to brand myself. But I also felt really good because when it was all said and done, I got that product. I got that CD. And at first, that felt like the finish line. Getting that press CD all wrapped up, you know, felt good. You know, taking it out, putting it in the system, listening to it with my boys. Yeah. And for that first CD that I made, we had 1,000 copies. At the time, I was staying in a one-room spot. It was a studio room in a big house. I basically had my bed, I had a desk, and then I had 1,000 CDs. So the thing is, I'd see them every day. Every day I come in my room, bam, stack of CDs. But I didn't think it was a problem because I was a hip-hop head. I am a hip-hop head. So at the time, I would read all the books. I'd read all the magazines about hip-hop and how artists were able to go from, you know, from being just a guy on the block to becoming a superstar. And one of the main ways in hip-hop was that independent route of going out there and selling your CD. So I would hear about artists that would sell 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 copies of their CD out the trunk. Now, I don't know why, looking back, it was always out the trunk. It had to be from the car. It wasn't the passenger seat. It wasn't like walking down the street with a box of CDs. It's always out the trunk. But from hearing these stories about rappers doing it, I was like, 1,000 copies? That's no problem. I'll make it happen. So first weekend of having my CD, I knew that I'd see a lot of people. There was a party going on and everybody was going to go out to the bar and the club. So I had my stack of 50 CDs, one box that I just took out around this party. And it was happening at this big house that I'm at too. So I figured like, maybe I go back, get a second box. And I see one of the guys who was like, yo, D man, like, you really got to make a CD. And I was like, yeah, I'm making one. And he's like, oh man, like, I'll support that when it comes out for sure. I would love to get it. So I see one of these people that said this, and there's a lot of them who said it, right? So I see the one and thinking about making my sale. So he's like, oh, wow, you made your CD. It looks really good. Yo, like, and he'd hold it in his hand. And then I'd say, yeah, only $5. And that's when he put it back in my hand and say, oh, man, you know what? I just don't have the money now, but I'll get it next time. So I would say, that's all good, man. Like, don't worry. I'm sure I'll see you around. It's all good. And I wouldn't think that much of it until I'm out at the bar. Because now that I'm out at the club, now I see that same person who said they didn't have any money, but I look at them and they have a round of drinks coming to them. And not just one round. I see them go back and get multiple rounds. And this isn't kind of a unique situation because I've seen this happen countless times now. But at that time, it really frustrated me because I was like, man, why can't you just support me? You'll buy a drink. But now you won't buy my CD for $5. So that's what brings me to the next step of this story. The second quality that I want to talk about, which is hustle. I realized at that point that if I don't hustle these CDs, I'm going to be looking at this stack of 1,000 for a long time. And I realized when you have a business, it's great to have support from your friends and family, but you can't count on them to be your clientele. You have to get some real customers, a real fan base. And so what I started to do was to become a hustler. So this part of it is where I say the hunger is having the dream, but the hustle is the action. It's about the plan in motion. Don't talk about it, be about it. This is the be about it, because it's when you have the plan and the strategy and you're out working it. And you also have a couple contingency plans, which is something I'm going to get into as well. So what I would do is I would say on the weekend, let me go to a beach. Let me go to a place where there's people that are just around that have a little bit of money in their pocket. I went to Wasaga Beach, about an hour away. And now when I approach somebody, I wouldn't say, hey, man, do you like hip hop? Do you want to buy a CD? What I'd say is, hey, man, you want to hear a quick freestyle? And somebody would say, yeah, sure. And I was like, just give me three things to rap about. How about cars and girls and the beach? You know, I'd always get those same three topics. It was a beach, right? So I would do a quick freestyle. And they'd be like, oh, wow, that was good, man. And that's when I would come in with the pitch of, yeah, I'm selling this CD. It's only $5. And now they would say, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess I'll buy one. But listen, one sec. Yo, man, you got to come check this guy. He did this crazy freestyle. And so now I'm doing another freestyle. And sometimes a crowd would gather because of that. So I really witnessed the power of word of mouth, that I didn't have to be the one reaching out and selling the CD. Now, my customers were doing that. Now, looking back, I've realized what that meant to me, what that experience meant, because at the time I just thought, hey, I'm selling CDs, they're liking it. But then I thought to myself, these people aren't actually listening to my CD. I didn't have a boombox. I didn't have a CD player that I was playing. So what they were doing was buying the experience. They were buying that moment. They were making a connection with me that I hope would lead to a memory where they're like, yo, man, I know you're going to make it. I can tell people that I got your first album, things like that. Or I'd hope that maybe in the future they'd be like, yo, man, I met this dude back in the day. He was out there hustling a CD. But there's one thing that I've been hearing again and again on a couple of these podcasts. Now, I listen to so many of them. Sorry, I don't know who exactly said this, but it goes a little something like this. People don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. And that's an important thing because the person wasn't just buying the CD. They could see my hunger. People buy how you make them feel. And in that moment, by kicking that freestyle, by saying something witty and clever, by putting a smile on their face, that's what was making my business work. And that's what was making me empty these boxes of 50 CDs. So from that trip up to the beach, that day I'd sell 50 CDs. Maybe on a good day, I'd sell 100. But what I also realized is how difficult it is to scale. Because I was still looking at that big number. I'm still saying, okay, I want to sell 10,000. But okay, how many days of selling these CDs is it going to take to get to 10,000? Because let's say I sell 100 CDs. I'd have to do that 100 days. And I'm not doing this like every single day. Maybe if I'm doing it 2 days on the weekend, but you get the point. It would take a long time to be able to sell those copies. So I'm thinking, you know, what do I got to do? And that brings me to the next step of the hustle, which is creating a business plan, which is crucial for an entrepreneur. Having a plan, having a marketing plan, a business plan, just having a plan, because a business plan is where you can hustle your ideas. So I think that sometimes as an artist, or just if you have a business idea, sometimes you think a business plan, that's corporate, like, man, I just have a passion, I just want to do this. But a business plan essentially is where you can put all your ideas in this plan and bring it to scale so you can do things on a larger level. So when I'm making this business plan, I did have a target for it. I wasn't just thinking the banks. I was thinking grants, because I realized I could apply for a grant, but I also thought, you know, I'm going to go into a record label with my business plan, show them what's up, right? So when I wrote my first business plan, when I wrote my first grant, I felt a little bit of entitlement, I got to admit, because I was like, my music's good, my plan is good, I should get the money. Now, as things went on and I learned the game a little bit, I realized it's not that easy, but it really sunk in when I sat on the other side of the table, when I sat as a jury member, because that's when I realized it's a little bit more complicated than that. And so I found, looking back at it, that there's three types of plans that you usually see from entrepreneurs, from artists, business plan wise. So I'll break down those quickly, which is the first one is the one you see a lot of time for musicians. And that's kind of the hunger plan. That's basically where you say, hey, I'm talented, and you listen to the music and it's really good. And the plan is basically like, you know, I don't know too much about business, but I just really want to make this project. And I know if I do it, things will work out. You know, I'll be able to take the next step of my career. And reading it with a little bit of knowledge of the music business, I felt and I feel sometimes like Jerry Maguire. Now, that's kind of an old school movie at this point, too. But one of the things he says in there is, help me help you. And that's kind of how you feel sometimes with artists, that they have the music, they have that hunger. But you got to have a little bit more, because you realize yourself, like, if I just give you this money, I don't know if you really know what to do. And then you could throw it all away and not have anything to show. Now, there's another person. There's somebody who is a hustler. Now, this person may not be as talented, and they're more business-minded, though. They're at least aware of the grants. They're aware of the opportunities. Maybe they're networking with the right people. Sometimes this is the type of person that's gone to school for it, whether it's just general university or college or like a specialized program, because nowadays there's a lot of music business programs. And I've spoken at some of these music business programs, and sometimes they can be a good thing to take. But I often find that these programs, and if you're just doing it from that hustle perspective, that you don't know about the real world sometimes. That sure, you can have these plans, but what is really going to happen? Like I said, I had a plan of selling 1,000 CDs. I thought it was going to be easy until I actually did it. So that's the hustle. But there's another thing that goes into that hustle, if you're just in a hustle, and it's kind of why that hunger person is like, if I just get with that hustle, I'll be good to go. I just need to hire a grant writer, because that's the only thing I'm lacking to business. And again, from sitting as somebody who's been on a jury, I see this happen a lot of the times, where I can tell it's a grant writer. And I could tell because I'm looking at 7 packages and 3 of them look exactly the same when it comes to their business. Their business plan is almost identical. Key part about business plans, the structure. At least you structure your organization of your thoughts in there. Great. But if the plan sounds the same as 2 other artists that I've just read, then I got to be kind of skeptical, because sure, you should get a radio programmer and you should get a booking agent, but how do I know that you're really going to do this and that it works for you? So that brings me to that third type. And to kind of wrap up a little bit of these first two qualities, the hunger and hustle, because it's when you put those two things together. So when I started showing my hunger in my hustle, that's when I started to have more success, especially when it came to grants. It's a powerful combination. So instead of just having a standard business plan, what I would do is I'd put in some of those stories. I'd say, hey, I'm doing open mics. Hey, I'm hustling CDs and selling them. And some people might think, well, it's supposed to be a business plan. It's supposed to be, you know, all corporate and stuff like that. But no, you want to sell a little bit of your personality and put that into it. And I think that's when you can become a little bit more successful by really individualizing your plan. Now, a key way to individualize that plan and to bring it to scale, because like I said, I'm trying to go from 100 CDs to 1,000 to 10,000, trying to figure out how to do that, is touring, which is become like the number one thing for an artist these days. I mean, let's face it, people aren't buying CDs. It's tough to sell 1,000 CDs now. People are downloading, people are streaming, and that's all good. But I also realized that to bring things to scale, I want to tour. And that's something a lot of artists want to do. That's a lot reason why a lot of us get into this game, to travel, to meet new people, to perform and pack crowds. So touring is the way you can build your fan base, your customers and your clients. And you can do it in your city, locally, you could do it nationally, and you can do it internationally. But how are you going to do it? Now, there's a rapper who's not so popular in Canada right now or Toronto because our boy Drake came at him, but Meek Mill, he had a song I really like called Levels, and that's kind of some hip-hop slang for there's levels to it, and I definitely think there's levels to touring and planning a tour. So the first level in a marketing plan is to say, I'm going to tour by getting a booking agent, and I'm going to think, that's great, but hey, I wanted to get a booking agent too. I ended up booking 1,000 shows by myself. And so I just recognize how difficult it is. And if you do your research, different genres have different success with booking agents. But historically in Canada, a lot of hip hop artists don't have a booking agent. It's very difficult to get. And that really goes for all genres. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg, because a booking agent usually won't pick you up unless you have a big crowd that's going to come to your shows nationwide. But how do you get this big crowd? You need that opportunity, right? So it can kind of be frustrating. So yeah, it's a good thing to put down, but sometimes you need a little bit more. So let's take it to level two, a university college tour. Because now you're going to have kind of a built-in crowd. If you do a show at a university or college, you're expecting everybody at that college to come. So that's another step up. But how are you going to make this happen? So if you did a little bit of research, and if you're a hustler, and if you moving up levels, you're going to say something like, I know about a conference where I can showcase in front of bookers. Now in Canada, this is called COCA, the Canadian Organization of Campus Activities, where you can showcase in front of bookers and have that opportunity to get booked for this tour. So if you write that in your plan, you've kind of shown a little bit more game, but it doesn't really stop with that, because you could take it up another level by actually saying when that conference is. And this is something a lot of artists don't seem to grasp, but it's kind of a basic jewel right here. Most conferences, most events in the music industry happen at the same time every year. MIDEM, world's largest music conference, happens at the same time every year. Now, it just got changed to at one point, but it's happening at the same time. Canadian Music Week, South by Southwest, all of these are at the same time. So COCA is at the same time, too. So if you have a plan and you say, hey, right now it's December, but we want to apply and we notice that the deadline's February so that hopefully we can get accepted and play in June so that we could book our shows in September for Frosh Week, which coincidentally is when our album's dropping. So now if I'm reading that plan, or if you're telling me that plan, I'm like, okay, this person's kind of thought it out. They're not just thinking 3 months ahead. They have a year plan. So that's a great thing to put in your plan, is a timeline, and be aware of these conferences. And so, like I said, that's where I put in my plan. And that's how it all worked out, right? Well, I wish I could say it was like that, because as I mentioned, if you hustle, you also have to have a contingency plan. Things don't always go according to plan. And I've showcased at COCA a few times, several conferences, or even if you showcase at an event like South by Southwest or Canadian Music Week. Now, if you're a performer, you kind of know when you did well. It's that feeling you get when you jump off stage and you're like, man, we killed it. And I say we because it wasn't me alone. Maybe if it was just me, I could kind of be in my own zone and be like, yeah, I did it. Well, really didn't go so good. But when you have a DJ and other artists on stage, I did it with a group. So we all came off feeling like, yeah, we did it. We smashed it. And then go out in the crowd and people are saying they enjoy it. And the promoters are saying they enjoy it. And I've seen this happen multiple times. Like, oh, so how much are you guys charging? Man, we got to get you down. Like, you guys were great, man. You guys are great. So you walk away just feeling great, feeling hype. The future's looking bright. But what happens when the phone doesn't ring? When the emails don't come in the inbox? Because one of the hardest parts, if not the hardest part of being an artist, is when you're good. And you know you're good, because you've gone through the adversity. You've overcame the obstacles. You had that feeling in your stomach like you killed it. People are telling you you killed it. But yet things aren't happening, or they're not happening as fast as you want them to happen. Very frustrating. But that's something that every artist goes through. And it's the same way if you're an entrepreneur and you open up a business and the product is good and people are telling you the product is good, but for some reason, you're not getting as much customers. People just aren't coming through the door. It's the same thing as back in the day when I was in school. Sometimes I would study for math. I put in my extra work, but I get my report card. I get the test results and I'd be like, oh man, it's frustrating. I'm putting in the work. It's just not showing. So that's going to bring us to our third and final thing that I want to talk about today, which is being humble. Now, some of you guys might be thinking, yo, D, I was following you until now, because humble sounds like it's the opposite of hip hop. Kanye West, one of the most successful hip hop artists, one of the biggest ones right now, happens to be an egomaniac. He just came out with this album and went on this tirade on Twitter, talking about how he's one of the greatest. And I mean, he's always kind of said that, but he takes it to another level, speaking of levels. But I think Kanye could get a slice of humble pie every now and again, too. I think it would benefit his career, too, to be real. But self-awareness is a key skill. And I've had to learn the importance of being objective about separating myself from my art, separating D.O. from Dwayne. And if you're in business, you have to separate your business from yourself. And sometimes that's just about being real with yourself. That when somebody says that they don't like your song, it doesn't mean they don't like you. Maybe they just don't like the song. So humble comes up when you have to deal with this word that we all hate. Like I said, whether you're an entrepreneur, a student, or a musician, I hate hearing the term realistic expectations. And for a long time, I didn't understand it. I was like, how am I supposed to be realistic? I want to be the next Jay-Z. I want to sell millions of albums. What am I supposed to do? Just say I want to sell a small number? What's up with that? You know, if you're in business, maybe you want to grow your business to franchise it. Grow 100 franchises across the country. So you don't want to hear that term realistic expectations. But at the same time, some days you just have to be real with yourself. So I learned that when I had those 1,000 CDs and had to be real with myself. They're not going to move themselves just out the box. I have to do something about it. When we weren't getting booked at COCA, I had to say, why? Is it because we're not good? which could be valid. I mean, like, just because you think you're good doesn't necessarily mean you are good, right? We've all seen American Idol and those type of shows. In my case, I realized I showcased with Classified, well-known artist, big fan base. So they ended up booking him, which makes sense, right? So when I realized that, I also said, let me put that in the plan. Now that I've kind of taken a little bumps and bruises of saying, yeah, I want to showcase Akoka, now I'd also write in my plan, I want to do that, but if this doesn't happen, this is what I'm going to do. And I think as an artist, more so than ever, it's about coming up with those creative ways to show that hunger. And kind of goes back to that beginning, because I would put in, or I love when I read an artist say, hey, if I don't get booked at a show, I know about this club that does an open mic, and I'm going to go there every Monday night and perform at that open mic and sell some CDs, bring them with me. Or I'm going to go out of town. I got a friend in this small town, and they go to this club every week. He knows the DJ. I'm pretty sure I could get on the mic, and I'm going to take some CDs out afterwards in that smoking area afterwards. So I'll sell some CDs while they're smoking cigarettes. And that might sound like a ghetto tour, and it is, but it can be an effective grassroots tour. Show swapping is a great thing for artists to do, where if you've got a friend in another town and they say, hey, you can come open for me, and then when you do a show in your town, you invite that artist. You know, that's another way of expanding your fan base and doing a grassroots style and just saying, I'm hungry and I'm humble. I recognize that I can't just do it all by myself. So humble is saying, yeah, I want to sell 10,000, but let me start with 500 first. Let me show you how I'm going to move 50 at a time to get that 500 and eventually get to that 10,000. So if you're on a jury, or if you're a business person, if you're talking to an investor or just somebody you're looking to get some advice from, chances are they're going to take you a little bit more serious by being humble, because they realize you've gone out there with your idea. You're putting it in practice. You don't just have the dream. You're actively trying to make it happen. Now, I'm going to wrap things up at this point. Don't want to keep this too long. You know me, I keep on going. I went for 8 hours before. So I want to wrap it up with a quote. And I didn't know who said this quote till I Googled it, because I've heard this from a few people. But it's attributed to Bill Gates. So some billionaire type of knowledge right now. And it goes like this. People tend to overestimate what they can do in a year, but they underestimate what they can do in 10 years. And I love this quote because I think it relates well to those three skills that I'm talking about, especially when I talked about being humble. So whenever you start with something, you've got big dreams, you want to take over the world, but you want it right now. So sometimes we overestimate this. Now, I'm saying it in 10 years, but you can also apply this in just a year. You know, when it's January 1st, we have big goals of what we want to do in the first few months. Like, things are going to change. We're going to do this. And sometimes we overestimate what we can do in those 3 months, but we underestimate what we can do in a year. And it comes back to goal setting, because it's about breaking those big goals into small, manageable goals. You're not going to get buff and be diesel overnight, but if you work at it consistently, if you have that hunger and if you had that hustle, eventually you're going to make those changes. But I think it's also important to be humble, to be always learning, and to be always just grateful that you're in a position to try to seize your dream. So with that said, I hope you enjoyed this first episode of On This Grind. Hopefully you click that subscribe button or leave some comments, and hopefully you got some value. Let me know what you think about it. Right? We're going to be doing several of these episodes the first season. And until the next time, I hope you stay on your grind. Oh, yeah.